welcome to Open Source Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Thanks for that, Joe. It's Scotty Hertz here, Joe Nicholson, my favorite reporter at this station. Glad to be here, and hopefully we can get our facts straight, which we usually do. I have full confidence that we will, Joe, and great to be here.
You didn't even introduce yourself.
Scotty Hertz, I think I did.
All right. Open Source is a CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Just go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen, and you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast from Podbean on the Guelph Politicast channel, or you can subscribe through iTunes. Today we will talk about last night's special meeting of Guelph City Council and about the future of Guelph Hydro and how it was decided and how the special committee is going to move forward with the merger option instead of sale or instead of buying up other utilities. We'll talk about what happened at the meeting and where council stood on the various possibilities and why. And then we will be welcoming Catherine Fife to the studio. She's the MPP for the riding of Kitchener-Waterloo, and there are many things we're going to talk to her about, including provincial hydro concerns, economic development, and the new term at Queen's Park coming up next week, and what the NDP caucus might have up their sleeve for the next couple of months. But first, speaking of Joes, Prime Minister Joe Trudeau was in Washington on Monday to talk to U.S. President David Trump in a hotly anticipated meeting that was meant to establish relations between the two leaders bigly. But seriously, there was actually a lot riding on this, but all anyone can seem to talk about, Scotty, is the politics of handshaking.
Yeah, that was kind of weird, but not surprising in that... Because the meeting went rather smoothly, by all accounts, there was no real massive flubs. That they needed something to focus on. And the handshaking analysis got rather strange, not as much with Trudeau and him sort of giving that hand the stink eye. But the other, I didn't realize how wacky Donald Trump's handshakes were. He's pulling, yanking the guy and doing this funky stuff. And I know that the covering your handshake is a Masonic move. I don't know whether Trump's a Mason. He probably is. Sorry, Mason, but you can call and confirm or give me crap. I don't know, but I know when I'm getting the grip.
If you know Trump is a Mason, call.
Yeah, and I don't want to play into people's conspiracy theories by any means. But yeah, it got quite ridiculous rather quickly when it became clear that it wasn't going to be, you know, strange like the Shinzo Abe visit or what was the deal with the blocking out the windows of the golf course? Did you hear this? So they were golfing and they didn't want anybody to look at them. So they blacked out the windows with garbage bags. Somebody could watch Trump golfing with Abe. It's like...
No, that sounds...
It's like every visit has something strange.
That sounds peculiar, though. I only heard about the doing national security stuff in the middle of a public dining hall.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, it's it's like every day it's something... And I've said this before. I'm thinking it's not like a broken record. The kids say, what's a broken record? other stuff that happened... Kellyanne Conway getting a possibly disciplined for her comments about the please buy Ivanka stuff.
Yeah.
Ivanka making doe eyes at Joe Trudeau there and all these great shots.
Why not?
Yeah, I guess so. It's, you know, it's difficult not to. And I noticed, too, from a bit of a local perspective, I didn't know Linda Hassenfratz from Lindemar was one of the... female entrepreneurs was down.
Speaking of conspiracies.
Yes, we should try and... conspiracy. I was going to say we should try and get her on, but I guess we won't now after that crack. She'd be like, those open source guys.
I don't disagree. I mean, the conspiracy theory joke isn't new, but I don't disagree about... She certainly... Lindemar is... It's not the most, it's not the biggest employer in Guelph, but it's probably the biggest private employer for sure.
It's, yeah, I believe it is the biggest private employer. If you add up all those little sub groups as well.
So it's not insignificant. And no. If you're going to have a meeting of powerful businesswomen from the U.S. and Canada, she should definitely be there, of course. If I can just roll back to the handshake.
But you can't let it go. No,
well, what was funny about that is... I was actually going to roll back further to the Abe thing. One of the things about the Abe visit didn't have anything to do with being in the security or doing national security out in the open. there somebody posted a picture to Facebook of him standing with the guy who was carrying the nuclear football, which is definitely a face you want to have out there, you know, revealing the identity of somebody. Yeah. But yeah, the handshake thing was interesting because like the night before, like literally the night before, John Oliver had a whole bit about Trump's weird handshake. So
that's coincidental.
When it happened and Trudeau didn't fall in the trap, he didn't get the yank. That was impressive. The thing is, and then one of the things a lot of people zeroed in on was that, to your point, it was the most boring day of the Trump administration so far.
Yeah, and it got clobbered by everything else that was happening, at least in the American. That's how the American news feeds, fake or otherwise, roll, is that they just sort of stop talking about things right away. Like, it's a very Canadian thing to hope that it's a big deal. It's like, oh, our prime minister's down there, and we, you know, Canada sent all kinds of reporters, including probably half of the CBC payroll, to go down and cover it,
for sure,
including the people that are already there. And it was the only thing on of their news on Monday. But yet down there, it was like things like the Joe Trudeau crack, and that didn't even really...
Well, Joe Trudeau was Tuesday.
Really
at
register.
The Spicer,
no, but even then, it's like you're off the radar almost right away.
Yeah, but then because, yeah, by Monday night, it was all about the Flynn resignation. National Security Advisor Michael Flynn was asked to resign, so he was basically fired.
Not because he did anything wrong.
Well, this is the weird part, was the, you know, that he was fired because he lied to the vice president, but he's a great guy, terrific guy. There was a weird, well, I mean, there were a lot of weird parts at the Trump press conference today, but one of the most weirdest was a point where he said the leaks are real, but the news is fake.
Mm-hmm.
So try and figure out the mental jujitsu there, that it's fake news about real leaks.
It's the 2 + 2 = 5 thing, right?
Yeah.
It's like every single thing they say, Trump, Kellyanne Conway, you name it, spicy. It's not even ridiculous anymore. It's becoming the new norm. I think it was somebody at The Guardian described it as the Gonzo presidency.
Yeah.
It's completely and utterly, in my view at least, out of control in terms of message spin. Everything's fake, but that's real, and you're losing people already. I mean, I'm not sure whether this whole thing is going to... I think there's people out there, John McCain among others, even among Republicans, that are hoping that this will tip Trump up. But, you know, what would it take?
I don't know what it would take, because more than enough to. I mean, he also had to withdraw his net labor secretary pick because he had, take your pick of reasons, you know, all these stories and allegations about Carl's Jr. and Hardee's mistreating employees.
Yeah, let's replace them all with robots. I heard that one. Like,
yeah, replace everyone with robots.
Yeah.
He's against minimum wage. There was all those, like, incredibly sexist Carl's Jr. ads.
So we're striking them off the next burger tour then, right?
There is no Carl's Jr. in Guelph anymore, though.
It's gone?
There's a Wendy's there now.
So we ate there and it's gone.
Well, it was just like several months after we ate there.
It was on the bottom of my list anyway. It was really crappy. I can say that now.
But yeah, this was
zero.
Around Christmas time.
Zero.
The Wendy's opened. But moving this back into politics. So he was withdrawn. And the guy they announced today, whose name's Acosta, is kind of like, is like a lawyer. And he's Hispanic. Yeah, he's Hispanic.
He's not Mexican.
I don't know if he's Mexican, but he's Hispanic. He's Latin
Mexican,
American. He's
problem,
got Latin
right?
American heritage. So, and that would be a first for the Trump cabinet, which is almost uniformly white with only a couple of exceptions.
It's their idea of diversity, right? It's like, we better get somebody's...
But he's more of an establishment pick, which, you know, is probably going to prompt people to kind of rubber stamp him, at least on the Republican side, because look who they could have had.
Mm-hmm.
A man who's accused of domestic abuse.
Ooh, that too, eh?
Yeah.
I missed that story.
Oh, yeah. Well, his wife redacted, but it was...
Keep up.
It was an allegation she made on the Oprah Winfrey Show, and somebody got the tape, which is kind of when things started to turn. But to get back to Canada...
Where are you talking about Canada?
It was... I mean, it was marked by the, I think... It chilled out a lot of people who weren't NDP. just gets from question period the next day, right?
Yeah.
The conservatives were actually very kind of nonplus about it. They didn't ask really anything about the trip. So that's like kind of a tacit endorsement of its accomplishments.
Yeah, because I think there was a fear that it was just going to derail. Like,
well, there was a fear that Trump or that Trudeau wasn't, or Joe, I should say, wasn't going to, you know, be able to handle Trump. But, again, Trudeau, people keep underestimating Trudeau, even like a year and a half later after winning bigly in the election, that it was going to be like a smoke show and then like Trudeau gets trumped or whatever the name of Ezra Levant's new book is called. It's, you know, it shows that Trudeau's good with the light touch, and that the whole thing about the women business leaders panel was all about doing a solid for Ivanka, who this is in her ballpark, and I think somebody in the Globe and Mail phrased it rightly that, you know, that Trudeau was trying to get in Trump's good books by doing something nice for his daughter, which of course is, you know, always going to be a winner.
And the gift was a picture of Trump and Trudeau the senior.
Yeah.
So what's the perfect gift to give Donald Trump?
A picture of himself.
A picture of himself. It's genius. Even this in the hotel room going, oh, what are we going to do? And I'm sure Joe was practicing his handshake from the mirror. Like, hey, I'm going to do this and I'm going to grab his arm. And
well, somebody said classic. That. That's his drama teacher background. It's like study the stuff and then you go in and handle it.
Yes.
As for the picture, Pierre could have looked less interested in being there with Donald Trump, but I mean that's not the point.
Yeah, but Trump of 1980 whatever is not the Trump of now, though, right?
He was just very true. He was just a blowhard,
just
real
a rich,
estate guy.
Rich dude,
rich kid, and yeah. Oh no, totally.
And not insane, maybe then.
Well, we can't be sure. The thing that's
kind
of
expressed on this show. There they are. Okay. We do need a disclaimer or anything.
The thing that's gone under the wire is actually something that, excuse me, Trump didn't do or say. It was his defense secretary who he was at a meeting in Brussels and he said that the members of NATO need to basically step up. Or America is going to moderate its commitments, which, I mean, that doesn't affect Canada so much. But for all the European members of NATO, that's kind of huge because, and I didn't know this, but only 5 of the 28 NATO members meet the 2% GDP to defense commitment. So that's what he was talking about in terms of stepping up. But it seems like kind of like a tacit threat in the mold of NATO. Yeah. Trump going on about how NATO is over and needs to be reformed or resolved, or it's not doing what he thinks or expects it to do. So
it kind of reminded me of when the conservatives were saying about our conservatives about the UN and how nobody was paying their way, and you know, there's all this talk, like, oh, no one pays for it anyway, and it's a useless body, but we still want to be on the Security Council. Wah. So yeah, it's a little bit of a game, but. Canada does seem to be stepping up a bit. We got troops. Is it Estonia? Lithuania, and also 200 going to the Ukraine, if I think that's correct. Pulling that out of the air, but I believe that's accurate, that as part of our NATO duties because of the continuing conflict there, which seems to be backed by the Russians. It all comes back to the Russians, doesn't it? Every story, there's like, except for Kim Jong-un's brother getting sprayed to death. And
oh, that's all on Kim Jong-un.
Oh, he knew that was what was going on. Something out of Bond. But I don't know if the American situation in terms of the spies is something out of Bond. It's more like out of Austin Powers, I think, at this point, where it's just kind of like, I just don't know. And, of course, Benjamin Netanyahu in town in the States as well. Mm-hmm. And Trump, as I read in one place, undoing years and years and years of diplomacy by saying, oh, just like the one state solution. That's fine.
It wasn't even that.
Let's go with that.
We're going to do something is going to make both parties happy. I thought maybe it would be the two-state solution, but now who knows? It's like, well, can you imagine a situation where the Palestinians are going to be happy with a one-state solution? And if that state is Israel, no, of course not. But this is like kind of his ignorance showing. And I don't mean ignorance like he's an ignoramus, although I might.
He's shooting from the hip.
But yeah, I mean, but this is like the kind of straight talk, and you know, it's you can't kind of straight talk your way through diplomacy. You have to actually sometimes know what you're talking about.
Read the memo, dude.
And read the memo, or maybe read a memo that's longer than one page with 9 bullet points, which is allegedly his standard.
Whoa.
Yeah. But yeah, and then he's talking about sending Jared Kushner like to go in there and solve Middle East peace. Why? Because your son-in-law is Jewish? He's going to solve it because he's Jewish?
I know a Jewish guy. I'll send him.
I mean, this... I mean,
send Scotty Hertz.
They talk about how they're not anti-Semitic, but I mean, to me, this is like the basis of anti-Semitism. It's like, it's a Jewish problem. We'll send the Jewish guy.
Right. Some of my friends are diplomats, right? Whatever. I don't know.
All right.
Beautiful grandchildren, also somewhat Jewish. Send them too.
Also somewhat.
Well, I mean, I don't know. So, yes, folks, it looks like Trump is going to be a regular part of our show unless something on earth can clobber any of this. So
there was a rumor there that maybe he'd pulled a Kim Jong-un on Mike Pence, but Mike Pence resurfaced today, so...
Sprayed him a sip of call or something. It was like, oh, wrong spritz bottle. Polonium tea, I think, is going to be the order of the day for somebody. Well, it's true.
Don't go there.
No, I know, but I... anyway, we better move on to something
else.
Yes,
we need to talk about
local issues.
Closer to home, Guelph Hydro. There was a special meeting of City Council last night to talk about the future of Guelph Hydro. Basically, a special committee... which was made up of 5 people, including the CAO, the CEO of Guelph Hydro, the chair of Guelph Hydro, and a couple of people from the community to decide to offer options of what the future of Guelph Hydro could be. And there were basically 4 options. And it was sell it, merge it, buy other utilities, or leave it exactly the same as it is right now in terms of its ownership structure. Buying up other utilities was discarded, and this committee came back with 2 options, which was to sell or merge. City Council heard the presentation last night and the justifications, heard from delegations from the community. There were about 10 in all, and then voted. And long story short, the sale option was voted down, not quite definitively, but fairly definitively. It was a 5-8 vote, 5-4-8 against. And oddly enough, it was kind of like a, because it was Phil Ault, June Hoffland, Mark McKinnon, Cam Guthrie, and Carl Wettstein who voted for.
To sell.
To sell, yeah.
Hmm.
And it's kind of like a mixed bag.
I read that backwards, I guess. I don't know. And I was at the meeting.
Well, to be fair, it wasn't like to sell. Like, we're going
to
sell it like starting tomorrow.
It's to explore the possibility.
So, right. Yeah. So, I mean, it was a mixed bag. So you have like 2 left people, 2 right people. And Carl Wettstein kind of is a floater, so to speak.
Yes.
He goes both ways, to put it another way that can be misconstrued, but
let's call him a centrist for lack of a better.
Sure. But I mean, that's how it shook out. And I think, just from some of the things, Phil Ault was saying was just, you know, it's a lot to take in. The visceral reaction is to say, no, keep a public utility public.
Mm-hmm.
But the flip side of it is there may be a lot of pressures on it in the future. And I think that's where a lot of people were. But it is interesting to note that sale was kind of rejected. And I think that was surprising in a way, because this council sort of gone against the current a couple of times. Mm-hmm. And we were joking last night about the Nisga Bridge situation, which
Which filled the room and then another room.
Yeah. But, I mean, something like that.
7 hours on bridges.
Right.
Four and a half, which is still pretty epic. You should know, folks, that Adam is at the whole thing from start to finish. I was just a mere trespasser last night for about an hour to see what was going on, to get the feel of what was going on, partially because we were talking about it today, but also, of course, I'm as interested in anybody as what's going on. But yeah, that's merge, not sell has been the...
Yeah.
Is, well, not the verdict, but that's they're going to explore that possibility. Right. With whom, not decided yet. That's my takeaway from this was there seemed to still be a lot of unknowns.
Right.
And I was surprised when it came up when they said, well, why are we doing this? I think somebody posited that at one point. It's like, so why? It was like, why are we doing it? Why are we here? Because, you know, it's a fiscally sound operation.
Yeah.
They're profitable. They don't seem to have many operating problems that aren't sort of out of the, abnormal issues. They're not broke. Mm-hmm. It seems like a pretty solid ship, but then it's like, we should sell. But they had said that it was because of, well, we don't know what the future will hold.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, but as the woman from the workers in the IBEW was saying, this has been a utility for, what, 110 years or something? Like, it's the same with the Junction Railway. I mean, it'll come up one day. It's like, well, we should sell the railway. It's like, well, is it running okay? Yes. Is it making money? Yes. Are there any, you know, structural problems with it? I like the fact that Phil Ault brought up cooperatives,
mm-hmm.
because that is an option that exists probably more so in at least North America and the U.S. than here, that a lot of electrification in the early days to get it widespread was with the cooperative model. And I personally, to toot the own horn, think that that's a fantastic idea in terms of it's an alternative that isn't just simply merging with somebody and then you're becoming this great body with, you know, and of course you will, because there was some of the vote was about control and who will control it.
That was a whole debate.
Yes. And how did, tell us a bit about that, because I missed that part.
Somebody, I can't remember who, I think it was Salisbury, possibly Billings, I can't remember who, but brought forward that it should be baked in any merger talk that we should have, that Guelph Hydro should have 50%, have a 50% stake, so that, you know, essentially Guelph would have a veto on any decision. And I think the concern was, if you merge once, there could be further mergers, because the trend is the utilities are getting bigger and bigger. There were 300 local distributing companies in Ontario a couple of decades ago. Now there's 70, and once all the once certain hurdles are cleared, it's probably going to be closer to 60. So the council wanted to bake into this the idea that if there's a merger, that Guelph maintain some sense of control and or a veto. And I think one of the deal breakers on that was, well, what if it's a three-way merger? Because you can't get 50% in a three-way merger. So it seemed to be...
No one would allow that. Mergers don't work that way.
It seemed to be kiboshed just on the basis of it would limit options.
And there seemed to be some talk about like merging with a local utility, and that they couldn't really do a solid on that. Like, you can't say, well, we're specifically going to merge with Milton. Is it Milton? Like, who's nearby? And I guess or Hydro One would be one of the nearby utilities as well.
Apparently,
right?
A lot of Wellington is covered by Hydro One, which is
like the county.
That's who we're kind of surrounded
by. Yes, and that was the way it used to be, that the main, before all the divisions and subdivisions of power lines and you name it, the dereg. Thanks, Mike Harris. that they handled the broader spectrum of the province, but I think that's been the biggest, not the biggest issue, but you get all of this deregulation, and then the merging kind of brings together, you know, so you can have this active body of. I was going to say the lots of dots. That was interesting too. The graph presenting about that, you have
the
this
Doppler.
Tipping point where it's like you've got 150,000 or 200,000 users. The price is this, and then there's a jump. But I mean, this is the problem too. Is that they had said that lower prices will come with this. I know they've already spent $100,000 researching this, right? Something like that. And that's just gone.
I don't think they spent. That
hasn't
much.
Been spent yet.
I think that's in the next phase.
That today was saying that they spent $100,000 already.
I don't think
maybe
so. I'd have to double check. But I think.
But there was a comment made that the mergers and this kind of thing generally prompt lower prices. The price never goes down. It never goes down. It's gone continuously up, not because of specifically about Guelph Hydro, but other factors that have gone on in the province. So much so, Guelph Hydro had to split the bill, so people weren't like, oh my God, it's $200 now, or $300, or $1,000, right? So it doesn't go down. It does not go down.
Well, the selling point of merger is that you would cut overhead, like
share resources.
Managerial costs, because you wouldn't have two CEOs of a combined system. You would have one CEO.
No, but you have a CEO, and you would have an associate vice president of the Guelph division, and they would get paid almost the same amount of money.
Yeah.
And everybody gets their cut, right? So,
but the idea is,
it'd be nice if the price went down. Geez, turn into cooperative, the price will definitely go down. But anyway, that's, again, my bias is shining through, but it's a good model. good model, but it's like...
But yeah, that was also something I was trying to be baked in. It's like, let's make sure we merge with somebody who's a neighboring utility.
And friendly, I guess.
Friendly. And so he was basically the CEO of Gulf Hydro, Pankaj Sardana, basically said, well, that limits our options down to like two, and one of them's Hydro One. So, you know, where do we go from here? And, you know, there's almost
Hydro
no
One's
point
for
in pursuing
sale,
it at
right?
all. Yeah.
It'll be 60% private within very soon, right?
I think it's at 70. No, it's well. I think it's 30
sold
right
out
30% now.
30%, and then
that's
the other 30 is going to go.
Still
so,
our next guest will have something to say.
Yes,
about
absolutely.
That.
That's right. It's just arrived. So,
to focus on the Guelph side, it was interesting that it did seem to be a fat. First of all, it was a rather quick decision.
Yeah.
And then second of all, it was very definitive. And I think people in Guelph could probably take a lot of comfort in that they were heard on this.
Definitely. And I got that impression right away.
Yeah. I think there was kind of a huge... I think there was a huge sigh of relief when it was kind of... Because I think a lot of people took off when they voted. It was like... Mm-hmm. I mean, it was almost 11 o'clock, so people were taking off anyway. But when people voted no to sale, yes to looking at merger, I think a lot of people were very, very relieved. And I think that's the takeaway, is that at least... On the local level, somebody is listening and understanding that privatization is not what people are looking for. Strangely enough, it was a business case too, because a couple of people made the business case that electricity use is only going to increase because we're looking at electric cars. Although I think it's a lot further in the future than 4 years when we've eliminated gas vehicles, as somebody implied last night.
It's definitely a long arc, that one.
But I mean, with all the devices people have and all the demand, you know.
Even though industrial demand is down, it's still going up. Like everything is going up. So.
Right.
Will we see a sustainable future? Will we see, well, coal is obviously not coming back. These are all of the things that are going to be examined. So hopefully if we do merge, we merge with somebody. We merge with a friendly, as I would call it. I don't think Ontario Hydro
merge
would
with
be
a friendly.
A friendly.
It, yeah.
Friendly fire. Friendly energy.
Care Bears Hydro. I don't know.
Care Bears Hydro.
I think they run everything.
They just generate it from their chests, and everything's cool.
That's where I was going with that.
That's where... That's I don't know if it's feasible, but it's... Or even remotely viable.
I don't know if it's feasible to run electricity off the superpowers of fictional cartoon characters.
I think we should start a business, our Care Bear Power Cooperative.
This seems to be going to
crazy
town. Yes, we
should probably go to break soon, but I should also mention in the news, it's not even a subpart of the story, I heard Guelph's getting two new Taco Bells. Did you hear this?
No.
Two new Taco Bells, the mayor says. Now, there's some...
Oh, is that the business? Those are the businesses?
That was
Taco Bells?
Taco Bell. One in the north, one in the west.
Ugh.
302 shares on Guelph today. So I don't know how many shares the Hydro story got, but Taco Bell's generating some excitement.
I'm glad somebody's excited about Taco Bell.
Can power the whole thing with tacos.
Oh, you don't want to
know
what you can power with Taco Bell. Anyway, we are going to take a break before this gets too weird.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll have Catherine Fife coming in after the break. You are listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
The pressure will one day drop on you. That was Toots the Maytals from the album Funky Kingston. And guess what that was called? It's called Pressure Drop. So that's part of our Black History Month selection. So we've gone through the comb the vinyl vaults for some classics. I absolutely love
it. It was
that
much
song.
Better than your original choice of Tammy Faye Baker singing God Bless America.
Yes, that was the original choice. And that may materialize one day, but I think that album should be buried. I bought it, actually. So I bought it for a buck, and just so it might not see the light of day ever again. So anyway.
You can bury
just
it in the backyard.
Relieve the people of their burden.
Excellent. Well, we are very pleased to welcome Kitchener-Waterloo MPP Catherine Fife in studio with us. You are the first, if I may say, extra Guelph external Guelph MPP to join us, so we really appreciate it. Thanks for coming on.
Well, it was worth the drive to Guelph.
Oh, you know,
along that Highway 7, it's just such a pleasure, isn't it? Yeah. Hashtag sarcasm.
Depends on the road. Mm-hmm. Although, you know, I made that joke about Acton several times, living in Georgetown for years. But anyway, I digress. So you are the only kind of NDP MPP in our area. That must be kind of lonely sometimes.
Yeah, it's kind of like that, yeah. It is true. I did win a by-election in 2012, and it was the first time that...
Big upset.
KW, thank you. KW had elected a new Democrat, and it is very true that there was a number of conservative MPs, and then now it's mostly liberal MPs. Mm-hmm. And I won again in 2014. I was really pleased to get that mandate from the people, because sometimes that doesn't happen with by-election candidates. And I'm currently serving as the NDP's economic development and jobs critic, research and innovation critic, and early learning and care critic.
Triple threat.
Yeah. Now, it is true that the Liberal government does give me a lot of material to work with. So I am... It's not too hard. But you know what I'm excited about? I was the finance critic for the last 2.5 years. I'm excited about developing a platform and doing the consultation piece in a meaningful manner that... So as we move forward towards the 2018 election, it's a fixed date.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it is 474 days until that election. So I have the work before me is to get out into the community outside of Queen's Park, listen to some really good ideas and then some informed voices, and develop a job strategy actually that will work in 2017-18.
Well, that's one of the things that interests me is because we for years, during the Harper years, we had Liberal members of Parliament represented in the House of Commons, and every election came up, the Conservative argument would be, well, like, don't you want to have someone who's part of the government, as if an opposition MP doesn't do any work other than, I guess, complain. But there is considerable work, and I do find it interesting the critic's role, because you basically have to stay on, you have to do all the same work as the cabinet position, and you're doing like two or three different cabinet positions.
Mm-hmm.
And just tell us a little about that work.
So, I mean, the critic portfolios are as you point out, I mean, we are aligned to those cabinet ministers. And you know, I mean, I have good working relationships with all members of all parties. But when it does come to the actual, you know, substance of legislation, you know, we do have a Liberal government in Ontario that has been in power for 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they're desperately trying to reinvent themselves. Mm-hmm. And you know, now sort of wake up to the issue of hydro, high hydro rates, for instance, huge tuition in the province of Ontario, highest tuition across the country. And as they try to, you know, reshape themselves in advance of a new election, it's my job to hold them to account.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoy that part, but I would actually, you know, one day potentially like to be in a place where I can be part of the solution in a meaningful manner and apply the knowledge that I've had as a critic. I mean, that's the goal, right?
Sure.
Is the knowledge transfer. So this morning, for instance, I had a great roundtable at Communitech talking about the venture capital, you know, missed opportunities in this country and in this province. And then also, you know, this whole startup community around tech and fintech and some people refer to it as the sharing economy, and you know, how are we going to adapt with that going forward, and how do we actually ensure that a whole new generation have the opportunity to reach their potential in mm-hmm. this economy? And there's a lot of things at play, obviously. I mean, CETA was passed yesterday. We have Donald Trump. I know you covered a little bit of him before. It's like Russian roulette with this guy. I mean, mm-hmm. every day he makes policy up on the fly. And I think that we have to be in a position as a province, because that's my purview, to be able to respond and not just react in a sort of impulsive way, mm-hmm. but be mindful about how we're going to deal with this kind of a president.
And I think that's the toughest part of all, because it seems, you know, we hear a lot about the characterization of our economy and, you know, the part-time workers, you know, struggling to find jobs. People don't have, like, the one career, their whole career anymore. Mm-hmm. But it really seems maybe the best way to characterize it is just we're in a crunch economy where there are so many outside pressures, almost too many outside pressures to really get a handle on ourselves and what we're going to make ourselves about as an economy.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that. I mean, the job numbers came out last Friday, and when 82% of the new jobs that were created last month in January 2017 are part-time precarious contract work, with women primarily having multiple jobs. I mean, the question remains, I mean, how are we going to ensure that people, one, can plan for the future? Are they reaching their potential? What is the role of government in ensuring that, you know, people get a decent amount of hours to build a life, to make a better life for their children and for their families? And so these are the issues that we're grappling with at the provincial level. But the changing nature of work has to be something that the government is aware of and acknowledges, because you can't address a problem until you actually acknowledge that you have a problem.
Right, and I think the idea of look at how many jobs we created sort of overrides the nature, and this is a universal problem at all levels. And we've had a number of Guelph city councillors in here talking about local jobs. That yes, here in Guelph we have a very low unemployment rate, but at the same time you have maybe some people working two or three part-time jobs, or you know, working underemployed as well, and I think that we do kind of mischaracterize the job market, and we just look purely at the numbers and say, look how many jobs we have, and we don't really look too deeply into what the jobs
are.
No,
I think the underemployment is something that we're going to have to pull back the layers on, because, you know, it's significant that we're here on a campus, that students are, you know, attending university with the hopes and the dream of actually, you know, acquiring a profession, a career that will make a difference. And I think that today's generation is hungry to make a difference.
Right.
And that's why, you know, visiting the startups where, you know, you have people who don't necessarily want to be an employee. They want to be part of a ecosystem, if you will, of the new economy, where not only are they, yes, earning a good living and making a difference in their community, but overall they're contributing to the overall wealth, the shared wealth of the province. Mm-hmm. And that's what I hear a lot from, you know, places like the Accelerator Center and Communitech. And I think that governments can play a tangible role in ensuring that, one, they're not getting in the way,
right?
But two, that they are developing policy which actually resonates and is in partnership with the private sector in an open and transparent, like not a backroom deal where you're getting a grant and the government has chosen you to be a winner. That actually undermines confidence in the economy.
Right. That seems to be what's driving the innovation in your area anyway, is and in Guelph to extent too. I think of the Iron Fish that actually started as a student project, and now it's this thriving local business. But in Waterloo, you're talking about tech development, different apps, and you know, you have all these, I want to say kids, it's not like I'm that old, but kids younger than me who are developing these things in school, and then, you know, not really thinking that this is going to be my career, but then they leave school and it becomes a business.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you've just tapped onto something that I'm passionate about, and that's the knowledge transfer from university and college campuses. Mm-hmm. And, you know, governments are investing heavily in universities and in the future potential of the students and then future employers. But right now, there's definitely a gap between that knowledge transfer into the commercialization of the research and the future jobs. So that and connectivity, which is public transit. It's the infrastructure piece. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are more people that commute into Waterloo Region from the Toronto area than commute out. And so it's an anomaly. And Guelph is not that far away, actually. I mean, this, for many years, you've heard that this is a bedroom community. I mean, people cannot afford Toronto.
Right.
It is cost prohibitive for young people to buy homes for families. And so that's had a trickle-out effect across the province, right? So we have to actually make sure that people can be productive productive and not sit in traffic. And that is key to the innovation of our economy.
And it's so weird thinking about that, too, because what way does the GO train go in the morning away from Kitchener-Waterloo?
Yeah, we need a train that goes from Toronto in past Guelph and into the Waterloo region. And even the Toronto Regional Board of Trade has identified that as a key factor for the overall economy of the province. So we've known this for a long time. It's going to cost a significant amount of money to put people over freight on the rail system. But there is a over the years, now a decade, of promises from government to actually make this happen. There is a cost to not ensuring that infrastructure is there.
Right.
And it's a cost to the overall economy. And I think that as we go forward, I mean, that's my job as the critic, is to connect infrastructure and transit investment to the economy, because it's a key part.
I was listening to a CBC radio interview you did where you said, and I like the line that dealing with GO Transit and the province, it's like Groundhog Day. It seems like it does.
it really does. And so, I mean, that's sort of, you know, listening to the business startups this morning, I mean, they don't have a lot of confidence in government. They have been disappointed. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I was trying to find out. Like, for instance, at the federal level, the government promised during the last election to buy, you know, and invest in these companies. So if you're investing in them from a research perspective, then why not, through the procurement process, be a customer of those businesses, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of a U.S. company or what have you. And one of the conditions of the Buy Canada agreement is that you can't already have a product in play already. Well, that runs counter to everything that is common sense. I mean, if you have a good product in the market, and it can be applied at the RCMP or one of the other government agencies and a proven track record, then the government should be investing in the resources that they've already invested in and benefiting from that knowledge. And so that was the big takeaway from me today, is that if going forward, the RFP process, the procurement process, if you will, needs to be open and transparent, but it needs to make sense.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that people don't have a lot of confidence in governments to do that.
Joe Trudeau, just be letting everyone know.
Yeah, you know, Joe, I heard you talking about Joe Trudeau on the drive over here. And, you know, I have to put a little piece in here, is that the backing away from the electoral reform.
You spoke at the Waterloo rally.
I spoke at the rally, and I fundamentally believe that when politicians take a serious, like, 180 on a promise like that, I mean, he did, it was... A lot of people voted for Justin Trudeau because he promised to make the next election, that election, the last first past the post. And I want to tell you why I think it's important, is because when I was elected into a minority government, I had to work with those other politicians. We had to collaborate at the committee level. They couldn't do whatever they wanted. We had an opportunity to inform legislation and inform policy. We were able to hold the government to account in a real tangible way. And politicians worked harder. I mean, who doesn't want politicians to work harder? And that happened in the minority. And in the majority, it's like we get shut down all the time. Mm-hmm. Even if we have truly, like, even when we're truly trying to work collaboratively, it's the partisanship is compromising our democracy. And so to have Justin Trudeau say this was my decision to make, it was not his decision to make. He got a mandate from the people of this country and the people of this province, and he has betrayed that promise and those people. And so I think that he has underestimated sort of the vitriol that will come his way. And it's true, you know, like the love-in is still there, right? I mean, he's so much better than Stephen Harper, but I think with every passing day and every passing week, you know, when he doesn't honor his commitment to First Nations education resources or clean drinking water, and then electoral reform, cash for access. I mean, you know, Stephen Harper had a problem with being influenced by big corporations, but we see this with Justin Trudeau. Mm-hmm. So I just want and I think many Canadians would like to see an electoral system which actually where your vote matters most. Mm-hmm. And that holds politicians more to a higher level of account. And I think that strengthens our democracy. So I'm still committed to and holding this prime minister to account on that issue.
Do you see the possibility of electoral reform maybe at a provincial level before the federal level? They kind of go hand in hand, I guess. Like there's no real Yeah. I guess the possibility is there.
I think the risk is that if the province sort of goes it alone, then it lets him off the hook, right? And also, we did try this in 2007. I was a candidate for the NDP in Waterloo in 2007. That's where we also had the referendum. Mm-hmm. So little education and communication on what proportional representation would look like in Ontario, and a lot of fear, quite honestly. And so that referendum failed. So I think that, this premier would point to the fact that they tried and it didn't work. Do I think it's worth trying again? I think so. But I think that we, at the moment, we have to hold this prime minister to account for another broken promise.
Absolutely. And I think there are a lot of people in Guelph who are there with you. And I know they're working on what they're calling a Made in Guelph solution, an actual proposal that they're going to have. Mm-hmm. Try and persuade Lloyd Longfield to show to Justin Trudeau and the Liberal Party.
Well, you have a really engaged citizenry here in Guelph. I mean, their work around the water taking is really commendable. And James Gordon, of course, I'm a huge fan of James Gordon. He did an amazing job of bringing forward a motion and putting the debate around our public resource, which is our water, into the political arena for a debate to happen. And really, in the end, forced the provincial government to pay attention. And that's no small feat, I would say.
Yeah, and I gave him full credit for that when we did our year-end show. I know I gave him Best Politician of the Year, and it was because of that, because he did bring... It was one of those things, and you kind of see this all the time, and maybe you can talk about it from your perspective as an MPP sitting across the aisle from her, but it just seems like Kathleen Wynne is at a point where if we want to get action from the Liberals on any number of things, it seems to be up to the citizenry to make noise about it.
Yeah.
Because that water thing is a great example. That the Nestle contract was up, I think, July 31st, but there was... nothing from the province in terms of is it going to be renewed or is she going to do something about it or the Ministry of Environment of Climate Change. And it just seems like, I mean, we may see a bit more movement now that we're 407 days.
474.
474 from election day. But
we go back. The House we sit on Tuesday, so our winter sort of session begins, and it's going to be interesting to see if there's a change of tone, right? Because there's no doubt about it. In the 2014 election, I think people were surprised that a majority happened for the Liberals. Mm-hmm. One is that they should thank Tim Hudak, who scared the living daylights out of people with his cutting 100,000 jobs. So that was, elections take on a life of their own.
Sure.
But at the time, there was the e-health scandal, $1 billion, Orange, $1 billion, gas plant, $1 billion. Like people, $1 billion, it's something that they couldn't connect to, but they get a hydro bill every single month now. And they see that they're doing everything. They're doing the conservation. They're doing their off-peak hours. And still, there's this built-in distribution fee, which is driving, especially our rural and northern communities, but also back to the economy and my portfolio, is that it is not a confidence builder for advanced manufacturing to come into Ontario because they see the greenhouses, they have to go 24/7. They can't go off peak. So the citizenry of this province, to their credit, working through opposition MPPs primarily, have said, we're not going to take this anymore. And they forced this premier to apologize.
Right.
Now, an apology can go anywhere, right? And quite honestly, for a little while, it went nowhere. But the affordability of energy and the conservation measures that need to happen, that will be first and foremost, I think, as we go back in this new session. And you never write anybody out. And so our job is to put forward some constructive ideas, but also to hold the government to account.
Well, since you segued into it, and I definitely wanted to touch on electricity before we let you go, but in terms of the ideas the NDP is putting forward, or just ideas generally, it doesn't have to come from a party necessarily, but in terms of where the government isn't doing what's needed on this and in terms of what should be done. Mm-hmm. What do you think that looks like?
So one of the major cost overrun that we are seeing, which will have a long-term impact on energy in this province until 2025, and this is what the Auditor General revealed to us, is that so far, because the Liberals privatized entirely the green energy movement,
right,
they built in the profit measures into all of those private contracts with solar and wind, which is not the way that you actually build a green economy or a green energy movement. So we are looking at, and we need to get access to those contracts, because she has predicted that there's still tens of billions of dollars at stake. Mm-hmm. So when you have that built-in profitability for those private companies into the energy sector, it is going to be very hard for us to actually control some of those costs. But our energy critic, Peter Tabbins, we are obviously looking at a number of issues to address those core built-in costs that we have actually been paying, like the rural customers have paid for those distribution lines over and over and over again.
Right.
And a lot of those people in the rural and farmers are going off grid,
mm-hmm,
because they just don't. They know that it's not sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, our challenge is to get access to those green energy contracts, find out, and Samsung was one of the big ones that we had to address in the legislature. What underpins all of these high costs around energy is that the government has favored private businesses and private companies over the public good.
Mm-hmm.
The sell-off of Hydro One, for instance, is a public asset. It was owned by you and I. Kathleen Wynne had no mandate to sell it.
Mm-hmm.
It will only increase the cost of energy going forward because those shareholders want a profit.
Right.
They are not really concerned about, you know, you and I and our hydro bills. So stopping the sell-off of Hydro One, we're at 30% now, is key. Addressing the privatization of energy in the province of Ontario comes a close second, but it's obviously connected. And then there's about 9 other things that need to be tweaked in the system to get the cost under control. And we'll be rolling that out, obviously, with our platform.
You think it's going to be rowdy during question period on Tuesday?
I think it always is rowdy. I mean, the other thing we haven't talked about, and I know we're short on time, but is the new leader of the PC party is really an unknown, right?
Mm-hmm.
And many people describe him as a chameleon. I mean, he goes into a room, he says one thing to one group, and he goes into another room, he says exactly the opposite. So, you know, that's where, you know, Andrea Horvath, our leader, actually has some credibility. She's run 2 campaigns already. She's well known. We've learned from our past and from some of our mistakes and have owned them and tried to, you know, correct where we want to go. And then they're sending me all across the province, you know, talking about jobs and putting forward pragmatic ideas so that we can get people back to work and so that they can reach their potential.
Well, we're glad you can make us one of your many stops. If people want to reach out to you or follow you on social media, how can they do that?
So I'm on Twitter. I use Twitter to share a lot of information. I'm C5KW. I'm obviously on Facebook and easily accessible at City Hall in Waterloo. It's one-stop complaining, I like to say. The federal the federal member is there on the 3rd floor. I'm on the 2nd, and then you have City Council. And so I like the co-location of that idea.
That is a great idea, actually. We may have to steal that here in Guelph. But we'll let you get back to Waterloo business, and we do appreciate you stopping by. Thank you so much, Catherine.
It's been a pleasure. I enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you. And we will call it a day for Open Sources. You can stay connected with us at opensourcesguelph.com. You can go to Open Sources Newswire on Facebook at @OS_Guelph on Twitter. And, of course, you can download this and other fine Open Sources podcasts on Podbean at the Guelph Politicast channel or through iTunes. You can connect with me on Twitter at Adam A. Donaldson, or go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and the Spanner Book, spannerbook.wordpress.com. And there's things there all the time now.
It's amazing.
Found some time somehow.
It's a Christmas miracle in
over
February.
Over cereal and just blog away.
Anyway, you can stay tuned next for DJ Sounds Good to Me here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio, and we will be back here next week with more issues, probably Trump-related, next Thursday at 5 p.m.